That's melodic drum soloist Brent Lewis with Doom Taka Doom. It's from his 1990 album, Earth Tribe Rhythms. This is Lead Stories. I'm Nutrice Lead, and it is time to free your mind on this April the 1st. And it is not, it's not a program for fools at all. It is not April Fool's Day around here. 888-874-4888 is the number to call. We engage each other in thoughts and ideas and information and opinions about things that matter to us all. And that is a process of educating each other and building community. So it's an open forum. And it's unscripted. There's no rule as to what you should talk about. This is the time for you to do what you want to do, to opine, prognosticate, analyze, dissect, debate, challenge, report, differ, do whatever you wish. And you call the shots, you drive this bus. 888-874-4888. Yesterday I had a little technical issue. My end, and the techno gods got me yesterday. So we will do that program next week. But today it's Free Your Mind Friday. Joel starts us off from New York. You're on the air, Joel.
Good afternoon, Nutrice. How are you doing?
Fine, thank you. How are you?
I'm very good. Thank you very much. So, I think I'd like to continue to talk about Bernie Sanders. You mentioned a few things that sort of put his candidacy in perspective, if I may.
Sure.
And one of the things that I've been thinking about is that he might actually be preferable to the deep state imperial rulers, capitalist rulers who govern the nation, you know, behind the sort of fake democratic surface cover of electoral politics. I mean, it's not that the 1% in the media like Bernie's talk about progressive taxation and Scandinavian-style social democracy and, you know, his populist rhetoric against Gilded Age, new Gilded Age inequalities. They don't like that, of course. But, of course, they have no taste for single-payer health insurance, big green jobs programs, and increased minimum wages, free college, and all the rest. But they know they and their deep state capitalists can block these policy dreams. They know they can cut a deal with this kind of neo-New Deal Bernie, who, by the way, is nowhere near as left or radical as many of his supporters and enemies think. And he has himself made sure to remind people that his definition of socialism includes for-profit ownership of the means of production, investment, and distribution, which, of course, is now so globalized as to really render calls for a kind of new deal really largely mute. And people haven't really thought about that. If he actually got in, what would happen? The other thing about Bernie that has always been on my mind is that he is an empire man. And the power elites know that Sanders has made absolutely sure to exempt the giant American global military empire, which is, of course, a leading profit source for the nation's ruling class, that he's exempted them from his jeremiads against concentrated power and privilege. He never talks about the military, and he is no internationalist or peacemaker. He's completely unsympathetic to whistleblowers. He called Chavez, Hugo Chavez, who is, after all, a classic social democrat, a dead communist dictator. He embraces Obama's arch-terrorist drone war. He supports the reckless U.S. provocation of Russia and Eastern Europe. And he calls for the arch-reactionary and fundamentalist Islam-sponsoring state of Saudi Arabia, which, of course, is a leading U.S. military client, to step up its already mass murderous military role in the Middle East. Back in 98, he brought back the Clinton administration's criminal and absolutely unnecessary bombing of Serbia over the opposition of anti-war activists in his own state. And he rationalizes Israel's murder of Palestinian children of Gaza. He did it in 2014 when he supported the increased military appropriations to the Israeli Defense Forces. And I remember when I was living in Vermont that he called police to arrest activists who are occupying his Burlington congressional office to protest the Serbia policy. And I remember even earlier when he was mayor of Burlington that he called the police to arrest peace protesters who were occupying an industrial plant owned by none other than blood-soaked military contractor General Electric. And he pushed and voted for the mass murderous and wasteful F-35 jet program, which is a classic Pentagon boondoggle, because it meant jobs for Vermont. And he has never called for a giant rollback of the gargantuan U.S. defense empire budget, which, after all, accounts for roughly half the world's military spending and maintains more than, 1,000 military bases, of course, 100 nations. So his genuinely liberal, progressive domestic social agenda leaves the Pentagon system to stand almost completely without criticism. When asked how he would pay for the good things like national, single-payer health insurance. And he says that we have to learn from Denmark and other significantly social-democratic Scandinavian countries without bothering to note that these nations have tiny military budgets. So it seems to me that Bernie Sanders' presidency would do wonders for helping star-spangled oligarchs and their many advance agents across the media sell the great fairy tale that the U.S. is a shining beacon of democracy. And letting an old Jewish guy from Brooklyn who calls himself a socialist become president might even be symbolically better than letting a black family occupy the White House when it comes to rebranding the U.S. corporate plutocracy as a, as a kind of magnificent model of popular self-governance.
Well, your points are well taken. Here's the other piece. Running as a democratic socialist, we've raised a question here on this program. What is the core? I mean, what backs him up except the Democratic Party to which he has pledged his troth? Is there a Democratic Socialist Party that he is connected to? And does he expect that in Congress he suddenly will get a groundswell of support as a so-called Democratic Socialist implementing measures or attempting to implement measures that are anathema, as they already are, to the establishment?
Well, I think he's a pretend socialist. I've always felt that. And I agree with Jill Stein that you can't articulate quasi-revolutionary sentiments, if you want to call them that, in a counter-revolutionary atmosphere. And that's what these two parties represent. And here's the thing. Sanders, I'm aware that Sanders has said repeatedly that a Sanders presidency would need to be backed by a great citizens movement. He says that all the time, take on the money interests. But here is the thing, Utrecht. Sanders would organize no such thing if he ever got in the White House. Bernie and the people around him are partisan, major party electoral politicos. They wouldn't know a revolutionary grassroots social movement until it bit them in the ass. And when it did, when it does, they can be counted on to do their best to co-opt and crush it like Obama did to Obama. You know what I'm saying?
Now, let me ask you, therefore, what are the people supporting, the millions of people supporting Bernie Sanders, what are they to make, then, of this movement? What is supposed to happen to it? Are they being duped? Are you suggesting that they have no clue about Bernie Sanders in this regard?
Well, these are harsh times. Everybody's got their own, narrative of suffering. These are very, very difficult times. And, people need to want to feel better. You know what I mean? So they rationalize these realities that you want to bring to the discussion. They rationalize them away because they're feeling so bad. And this guy seems to offer a new kind of hope. I'm afraid that, I'm trying to be somewhat diplomatic because, certainly a lot of his supporters, I should say also, for full disclosure, that I actually gave $250 to the Sanders campaign. Not that I'm, supporting him, but I did it at a time when I just felt that we have to stop Clintonism at any cost, because I really believe that a Clinton presidency will be worse if that can be imagined, than a Trump presidency. And so I got a call from the Sanders people when they were opening the New York offices, because I gave more than the average $27 that's usually given to this campaign, and they asked me, would I like to work in the campaign? And there was a pregnant silence, and I said, no, I said, I'll never betray the Palestinian people. And that's what his supporters really, they don't really grasp the dilemmas of his candidacy. And they're hoping that, you know, that the enthusiasm of the candidacy will sweep the day, but they don't really want to think, about the realities of creating social movements. None of this can happen, electorally. I mean, the electoral politics, in the United States is really dead now. The two parties are completely ossified. They've really lost all sense of they're moribund, they're comatose. They have no sense of what is going on in the country anymore. Years ago, Edward Herman and Noam Chomsky wrote a great book, I think it was in 1989, called Manufacturing Consent. And I was looking at it recently, and it has more relevance today than ever. I mean, the major issues of the day aren't even being discussed. And it looks like we are going to have because it's probably correct to say that Trump will be facing Hillary in the campaign. And so it looks like we're going to have an inveterate, lifelong criminal grifter pitted against a histrionic primal screamer. And they're going to be doing nothing but hurling invectives at each other. So the campaigns will be about them and not about the profound problems and predicaments that we face. So if the candidates can't see what's happening and the major candidate and the major parties can't see what's happening, it's difficult to assume how even, you know, intelligent people. And remember that Sanders' strength comes from a lot of young white, increasingly young black voters who are screwed, completely screwed. They're really hoping, in a sense beyond hope, that they're not asking these basic questions that you and I have been raising.
Well, thank you for getting us started today.
Okay.
From
bye-bye.
Brooklyn, yeah, you on the air. Hello, you're on the air. Okay, we move
I'm sorry,
on. Ed
I did not
from Queens,
call
are you there?
Patrice, I called to order some.
Okay, so we'll take Ed from Queens. You're on the air, Ed.
You hear me?
Yes, you're on the air.
Oh, okay, hello. I'm starting to get really annoyed with people in this political cycle and how they address it. I mean, you know, I've been saying this for years, and I'm going to say it until I'm no longer on this mortal coil. You cannot look at people or individuals who every 4 years come around, promises, and expect to have a change. You've got to be active in your own change. You've got to be an active participant in your own destiny. And people constantly get caught up in this electoral four-year fervor every year, looking at individuals, Bernie Sanders, Hillary Clinton, Donald Trump. Number one, no one in this type of political system, this type of false democracy, is going to be able, no one individual is going to be able to change the status quo. That's the bottom line. There's a shadow government. There are mechanisms built into different offices in the government that perpetuate itself, number one. Number two, anything that has changed this government, if you look at historically from the time this country was stolen from the people that were here till now, has been with mass movements of people. People forcing the political machine to do exactly what they want them to do. No one has ever depended upon a personality. The way history writes the story, it might promote a certain personality, but if you look behind the scenes, it's been movements. From the abolition of slavery to women's suffrages to the labor movement, it's been masses of people getting off their behinds and doing what is necessary to make this government change. This government has no interest in the people. This government has an interest in making a profit. Calvin Coolidge said it 100 years ago, over 100 years ago, and it's still true today. The business of America is business. And if it's good for business, we'll do it. America will do it, as far as the government is concerned. If it's bad for business, we won't do it. But if someone benefits while we're doing it, that's great. If someone doesn't, we're still going to do it. From the lead in the water to the police shooting down young African-American men, people have got to wake up. You've got to force this government to do anything. It's not going to do it of its own volition, and no one individual is going to change anything.
You make a very good point. However, where do you suggest that this thing start, this movement? What I mean, you do have elections every 4 years. Mm-hmm. So what are people supposed to do at election time as we have now? Okay, the election is here. It's election year. What do you suggest that people do this year?
This year, I mean, you know, there's really not much you can do to address a problem that took a long time to get this way. I mean, the main thing now, what I'm trying to help people do with the organizations that I work with and the people that I work with, is to get you politically educated. Understand what's going on. Understand the processes that are in front of you. Get involved locally. You know, I mean, yeah, we got this national election. Everybody gets caught. Get involved locally. If you look throughout historically, all change starts locally. Even with the healthcare movement. If you look at Canada, it started in the provinces. It didn't start in the central government. It started in the provinces. It started in Quebec and Ontario, and it moved forward. And the consensus came with the people, and things started to change. And that's how you do it. That's how you do it. You have to work on a prospect. You understand what I'm saying? You have to work together to develop a movement that is going to have some leg. Not every 4 years, get all twisted, get all upset, get behind a candidate or get behind a personality that you think is going to change anything. Because they're not. Once they get elected, their job is to get elected again.
To your mind, Ed, is there anything that comes close to what you're talking about?
Unfortunately, no. I mean, there are a few bright spots, but no one is really have that political savviness to understand what movement building is. I believe it's like Marcus Garvey said, once the conditions become unbearable, I'm paraphrasing, but once conditions will organize people when all else fails to. And I think things have to get very bad. And from what I can see, they will. They will get a lot worse. And when people have reached that boiling point, unfortunately, that usually a critical mass has to, then we'll start to see the movement building, then we'll start to see the political education, and then we might start to see the beginnings of change. I don't know if it's going to be in my lifetime, but that's the only thing I really hope for.
Well, thank you. Very profound. Thank you so much, Ed, for your contribution today. Gino from Brooklyn, you're on the air.
Patrice, it's the other B, the Bronx.
Oh, okay, sorry. David,
okay,
the Bronx.
Okay, right. Honest mistake. Good day again. We got another gift of the present. Good
thank
to
you.
From you. And yes, so, Patrice, last week those two callers before, they sure, you know, it just continues. That fella sure sounds like beforehand he read the Zinn's People History of the United States. Very good book. And the other fella talking about politics and Sanders and Clinton, yeah, a lot of points he made is true. I would remember Kennedy, though. He came in, he was a war hawk, and he pulled out the advisors from Vietnam, and when he got killed, Johnson sent in the troops. So, and he did allow for not to be a nuclear configuration, and the generals wanted to go in the basement, and he said, no, we're staying in the White House, and we will, if something happens, we're going down with the ship, and that's the kind of courage he had. Even his wife stayed up there in the White House with him. So he made that personal phone call to Khrushchev, knowing that there was that secret body, as was indicated, who into the military-industrial complex, that giant welfare system, and so we are still here able to talk. So Bernie, yes, he has a lot to learn about foreign policy, as was indicated with Ukraine and the coup there. He has to learn about that in Arabia, Saudi Arabia, and the terrorism they're sponsoring with the ISIS and all that, and in Israel. It's true. So he's not a saint, but he does speak about the bankers, the only group that Jesus ever got angry with, and that's they are the main ball players behind it all. So now, Utrice?
Yes, listening.
Okay, I was hearing some sounds. I don't know if I was still connected. Now, as far as something more positive, because most of these people get too much attention when you look at the scales at the end of the day. The folks who are doing damage to the world get too much attention. So, the last call last week was on Tesla, and you said you're going to get a guest on. Now, just to add to that real quickly before you get that guest, something about Tesla. Tesla, unlike Edison, he could see things in his mind immediately without doing thousands of experiments. This is what I remember from a book years ago. And he was when he was back in Serbia, you know, he came here with $3 in a suitcase, which got robbed. He went to Edison with a note of introduction. Edison put him to work for him. He went to work for Westinghouse. He eventually was owed millions of dollars. He tore up the contract saying it's more important that people have power. He was able to get power like the wireless from the air. He had an electric plant in Long Island just tapping into the Earth's electromagnetic field. He knew about solar. In the early days, he was actually very depressed. And you know what helped to save him? Humor. He discovered the writings of Mark Twain. And I had a book home, I'm right here. He's holding a light bulb, Mark Twain, it's lit up without wires. So there was the answer to the whole conflagration, the war and the spoiling of the earth and, the spillages and everything else and the coal and the burning and the global warming. There was a man sent by the Creator with answers that were clean, and they put him aside and they stepped on him and they pushed him down. So when you get that, and again, I did say last week he did go to Edgar Cayce. So, they all know each other, these people. You know, this is the thing. If people do their homework on the spiritual folks who really were there to provide answers, the thing is they're so humble that they're not out to get power for themselves. Look at this guy. He tore up a contract, you know, for millions of dollars. And by the way, when he asked to borrow money from Westinghouse, he was turned down in the future. The fellow from Brooklyn, Dave, made a reference to Niagara Falls. Tesla developed the alternative energy. Edison was just direct current, and when Tesla came up with alternate, that was a big, big, he really tried to squash that, but that's what we use now. So if you go to Niagara Falls, you see a statue of him. So, yeah, I look forward to the guest. And just to say, these folks all knew each other. George Washington Carver knew Gandhi. You know, Gandhi knew Paramahansa Yogananda, who taught him how to meditate. You know, there are very few of them, but these are the folks that had we listened to, we would not be in the mess we're in, and it's not too late to listen to them. And the last point is, you know, when that other bonehead, that ignoramus, that sadistic egomaniac Bush was going for that fake war with Cheney pushing him there, the people for the first time, this is the thing about America. One hand is a lot of ignorance, and on the other hand, it's the first time that many people came out marching in the millions all over the world and in America. The only problem, and with Obama, we have to keep it up. It's true. They are looking for help. They can't do it alone. There are people behind them who they know are powerful people, but we have to be there persistently, consistently, edging them on, like Roosevelt even said, get out there and make me do it. We can't just expect them to do everything, and that's why we're all responsible for what's going on. So I hope with the spirit of it all, Bernie gets in there. Maybe he could get Jill Stein. That would be great as a vice president. You never know. We don't know how long he's got to be here. She would be in the president. So, and that would be the woman factor without somebody who glees and laughs over somebody's, death the way, she did over the fellow in, what is that? I got a block, Gaddafi. You know, she not the place, she's for women's rights. Now they're lucky if they could even go to school over there. So, it's 2 weeks in a row, but I've been listening to you for over 20 years, so I hope it's not too much.
Not at all. Thank you for calling, and
thank you.
I was noting, by the way, since you mentioned Tesla and we started talking about him, that the new Model 3 is already getting a lot of attention, and hopefully they think will be a breakthrough for this
down.
New kind of technology in cars. Thanks for calling.
You're
Harvey
welcome.
From Berkeley, what have you to say today? How are you?
Hello, wonderful Eugene.
Hello, wonderful Harvey.
Well, I recently watched a fascinating documentary on YouTube about the formation of the Earth from its inception to our present time, and it was called The Story of Earth and Life. And according to the historical record, some of our ancestors migrated out of Africa because of environmental stress, like drought and food shortages, and over time, we spread across the globe. And some of us journeyed to northern latitudes where there was less need for melatonin in our skin to protect us from the strong rays of the African sun. And the combined difference of physical environments and diet created the variety of people that we see on the planet today. And if we compare the genetic differences of people worldwide, they're minuscule. There's only one race, the human race, and we're all variations of that human race. And our collective heritage is African. And I tell people, if you want to see a person of African descent, just look in the mirror. And the fact that we all look different from each other, in my opinion, is a gift, not a curse, because variety is the spice of life. And now that we have the technology to begin our migration into space, the Russian Space Agency has recently announced that we're going to send an expedition to Mars with plans of colonizing the Red Planet. And it's my belief that after a few generations on Mars, the Martians will start to look quite different from the way we look, because for one reason, there's less gravity on Mars. But the interesting point is that these new Martians will be of African descent. And as far as I'm concerned, we are one.
Thank you.
Thank
Always
you.
Something good and positive coming from you to us every time you call. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
All righty. Is David, or Gino, sorry, I'm mixed up, Gino on the air?
Hello?
Hello, you're on the air.
No, this is David. Not Gino. Okay.
All righty.
You know, a few days ago you asked about who many of us are going to vote for president. I'm seriously thinking about writing your name in because...
I'll be running from office.
Well, you know... As I think about this whole discussion, there's no hope in this. We're living in a place where those who rule are completely in charge. They have got people involved in two so-called parties that don't represent the people at all, just represent the oligarchy, and there is no hope in this. There's no way you're going to reform the Republicans or the Democrats. What happens, people have to understand the game, and the game is this. Those people in charge have their two parties. They corral the people into those parties, and they continue their goal of making as much profit as they can, and slowly but surely, they impoverish the people more and more as they're doing now. Now, when it gets to the point where there's a possible rebellion coming up, then they throw out a bone. And that's what these people do. The people here have to understand the game, which is to maintain the wealth and power in the area where the oligarchy is in charge for their benefit. There's no way that you're going to reform these two parties. So this is the game. When the bone is thrown out, that pushes down the possibility of rebellion somewhat. And as they go along, they take back those, for example, social or economic benefits that they can get away with, like they have done with Social Security and the welfare system, and they slowly take it back when they can. So if they give it to you, they can take it back from you, and people have to get it. We have to have something where the people are represented by the parties that run for these elections, and working in for the benefit of all the people who live here. But the way it is now, there's no possible way that you can get any kind of benefit from the present system that we have.
Okay, with that as the standing thesis, your standing thesis, what therefore should people do this year?
All right, well, I don't think people should vote for either one of those parties, and they either sit it out or do what I'm going to do, right in possibly you, and start organizing at the local level. You're not going to get anything by just going down and pulling a lever and voting, or going on one of these crooked computer voting machines. There's
This was the point that Ed was making, that the issue is to begin political action at the local level, and I understand that. However, is there not some kind of opportunity in the moment that we're in to do something? What would that something be?
Well, as I see it, it would have to be a demonstration and rebellious action. You're not going to do it by the voting, so you've got to get out and start protesting at first, and then that carries on to whatever is necessary to make the impact that you want to make. Because the voting alone is not going to do it. Having people that look like you or that are in office, they become part of the system run by the oligarchy, even though they look like you. They like are comprador people who do not serve your need. They serve the need of the ones who are at the top. So just having the ministers in the black community or black office holders is not enough. They can always get someone that looks like you that carries on the agenda of those who are at the top right now.
Thank you, David, for your call today, for your contribution. I really appreciate it. Let's go to North Carolina. Janice, you're on the air.
Hi, Yatrice.
Hello.
Yatrice, this is what I think. You know, somebody is going to be president. I guess we're going to have an election, unless something really disruptive happens. And I feel it's my responsibility to do my best to get somebody in there who's going to do the least amount of harm and who's going to do the most good. Because to some degree, I'm not sure what the President of the United States does wield a lot of power, although that's questionable who's really running things. You know, is Barack Obama really running things, or are the special interest groups really running things? But at any rate, the president's going to have some power. And for me, there's only one choice, and that's Bernie. I understand that, as Gino said, Bernie is not a saint. And thanks to some of the callers on this show, I've been a Bernie supporter for a while, but thanks to some of the callers on this show, I am becoming more aware of his imperfections and his flaws where it comes to foreign policy. But I recently he spoke out about Palestine, and gave me a lot of hope that we could actually get somebody in there who would make an attempt to bring some kind of fairness to that whole situation. And things that I'm really supporting him for is that I do believe he really gets it about climate change. I don't think Hillary does. That's only one of the my big misgivings about her. You know, she gives lip service, but she's not going to do anything to prevent fracking. And, of course, if you remember, only recently she was not willing to come out against the pipeline from Canada, which was going to cause, if it had gone through, would be game over, according to some climate scientists. So, you know, there's a lot of lip service, but there's no real feeling. So Bernie gets it about that. And also, he is very much opposed to the Trans-Pacific Partnership, which the more I learn about that, that would just give corporations rule over most of the parts of the world, including the United States, that sign into that. And so if we think our economy is bad now, just wait. You know, it would be many times worse.
I want to ask a question because you've identified at least four or five major areas that concern you. You talked about climate change, Palestine, fracking, the Trans-Pacific Partnership.
Yes.
Does it concern you at all that as a voter or a would-be voter, this is where we are? We are conditioned to see this whole thing as really a collection of issues that we might relate to, as opposed to the whole shebang. We fractionate politics. Politics has been divvied up into all these different segments. Of course, it's all about marketing and conditioning. We are conditioned, therefore, to seek out candidates and candidacies that we think are compatible with us on the basis of where they stand on fracking or where they stand on abortion or where they stand on this and where they stand on that. As if that suggests that they become acceptable because we can identify immediately as to, you know, when we compare lists. My list is fracking, Trans-Pacific Partnership, climate change, and Palestine. Let's say those are the four things. And anybody who says, okay, I'm with you on that, it's okay. Does it concern you that this is where we are as a body politic? This is what we've been reduced to?
Oh, yeah. Well, I think right now the population is so underinformed and misinformed thanks to, and, you know, I'm not saying that I'm better informed than anybody else, but at least I try. I seek, and, you know, for example, I listen to this show and other shows on PRN and go into The Intercept, Glenn Greenwald's publication. But the corporate media is, a friend of mine said, you know, I said once to him, he was from the Dominican Republic, and I said, you know, we are the most brainwashed people, I think, in the world. And he said, well, you know, it's a multi-billion dollar industry and a brainwashing. And, you know, you have the cable news spewing out all their half facts or no facts. And, yeah, it's a very big concern. Yeah, I do agree. But at the same time, you know, the election is coming, and or the primaries are coming, and they're here and they're continuing. We have a chance, I think, even to make a slight change for the better is better than no, you know, to take no action and to just sit back and say, well, there's nothing I can do. It's really up to us, the people, to get informed and to hold people accountable. And in the event that Bernie did get elected, which I know is kind of a long shot, but I would hope that we all of his supporters, are really going to get busier than ever and holding him accountable for all issues across the spectrum, not just climate change and so forth. You know, it really is up to us. It's not easy, but, you know, it's our world and
I appreciate you did a great job of actually delineating the dilemma that we have. This is what this is the problem. This is where we stuck. And the question really for all of us is, you know, what do we do? But thank you so much for delineating it and for helping us understand that dilema. Thank you so much.
Can I just say one more thing? This show is a jewel. It really is. You know, when I look at at TV and the corporate media, it's so like, ugh. So horrible, and this is just wonderful. This is such a breath of fresh air.
Thank you so much. Rosedale, New York. Jose, you're on the air. Hello.
So blessing to be upon you always.
Thank you. Thanks so much. What is your mind going to be freed of today?
Well, I want to touch on something, but I'd just like to make a quick comment on one of your previous callers. When you asked about the system and how what is needed to change the system. And I really believe that this system is irretrievable. You have laid out a few points as to how we as a people should go about and trying to impact on this system. But I don't think our folks are disciplined enough and conscious enough to go in that direction. And so that, I believe, is out. But I believe the system, it has to be totally dismembered and something come up out of the ashes. We have to have one of these type of European, Eastern European uprising, Tiananmen Square type of stuff, where enough American citizens wake up and understand that this system is rigged. It is rigged against us. It is rigged in the interest of the few that controls real power in this country. And we concentrate on politics, and we talk about elected officials. We pin our hopes on Hillary. We pin our hopes on this one, pin our hopes on that one. And the game is rigged. And most of us can't understand that. As your last call, I think, mentioned that she's going to vote for I think you used to say at one time, the lesser of the two lessers or something like that, right?
The lesser of the two evils and the evil of two lessers.
Okay. So we're always caught in that kind of situation. We'll never have anyone that we can actually look at and say, this is the people's candidate. This person is going to deliver us. We have never had that. And so we are going to go to the polls again because we said that our ancestors have sacrificed and have done this and done that and so forth, and we have to go and vote. But it is really an exercise in futility. I honestly believe that. So I'm going to leave that alone for the wiser heads to deal with that. But I personally believe that the system, it has to be dismembered and something rise up out of the ashes and a better system than what we have. This one is not working. It has never worked and it never will work. So that is my say on that. But the real thing that I call you about, my professor, is about, I've been listening to all these candidates, and I noticed that nowhere in the mix, this huge continent, as this brother has mentioned a moment ago about this space, this documentary he saw, talking about the creation of humankind, mankind which originated on the continent of Africa, and this continent has provided so much wealth. Untold wealth for the countries of Europe, including this European country here, Israel, all those countries, they are still up to this point still extracting untold wealth out of that continent. It's a huge continent that so many depend on that country for its survival, and nowhere in this political mix. I've heard Africa mentioned. I've not heard what is it that the African continent, the leaders of the continent can expect from this thing here that is going on. And I want to know, where are the questions? When I am hoping that Bernie and his folks can, when they come to Brooklyn for their debate, if you want to call it that, that we the little people, we get an opportunity to get in on the act and to ask pertinent questions. Because what these fellows are asking these candidates, it has no relevance to most of us. And it is time that we get the opportunity to actually ask these people questions. I am hoping...
Well, actually, I would go one better. Gerald Horn makes the point all the time, mm-hmm. When we talk about the impact on the international scene, mm-hmm. that African Americans in particular could have and should have, and the reverse also is true.
Yes.
With all of these, the Urban League, the NAACP, Reverend Sharpton, Jesse Jackson, all these so-called leaders – They don't ask any questions, and they don't make any demands. And so the system, through them, responds accordingly. It just negates the question. The very fact that you have brought this to the attention of the public means that you can't possibly be the only one with this idea. Why is Africa absent in terms of foreign policy? What is it that the potential presidential candidates, potential presidents, have to say about U.S. foreign policy toward African nations and the African diaspora, period? There is no response because there is no demand.
Mm-hmm. Sharpton is having his convention in April here. And Bernie, Uncle Bernie will be there, and Queen Hillary will be there. And I am hoping, I know they're not going to do it, but I'm hoping against all hope that I will have the opportunity to ask them pertinent questions. But they shield these candidates when they come in our presence. These charlatans shield them from us. And it's not that we have questions to ask. And some of us, we have the cojones to ask the questions. But they don't want to allow us the right to ask these questions.
No, in fact, I'll give you a direct example. When Bill Clinton was running for president, well, of course, they do not talk routinely to the black press. Mm-hmm. And that included Jesse Jackson, by the way. He did not have a history of talking regularly with the black press. So on the one occasion that they held this news conference, Bill Clinton hurriedly put together, his people hurriedly put together a news briefing at the Sheraton. And they kind of, you know, it's a cattle call. They just herd you into the room, something they would never do with, say, the New York Times or CBS or anything. So they herd us all into this one room. And Bill Clinton spent about 10 minutes or maybe 15 minutes supposedly addressing the concerns of the black media. Mm-hmm. I asked him a question about Haiti, mm-hmm. and what was his foreign policy toward Haiti, and how would it differ with the regime that was in office at the time.
Yes.
And he didn't have an answer. And I pressed him. I said, well, why don't you have an answer for that? And guess what? The person sitting right next to me was the publisher at the time of the New York Amsterdam News, the late Bill Tatum.
Mm-hmm.
And he turned to me and with great ferocity scolded me for attempting to embarrass Bill Clinton.
As if he can be embarrassed.
Now, here's the publisher of one of the oldest black papers scolding me. He's scolding me. What was I trying to do to Bill Clinton? To embarrass him? How wrong I was and how rude I was to ask him the question and then to insist on an answer and then to state emphatically, so you have no foreign policy toward mm-hmm. Haiti. And that was at the time that Haitians were being interdicted on the high seas and drowning.
Yes.
In an attempt to flee. So flee the U.S.-backed government at the time. Mm-hmm. So it was interesting that is the reaction, and that is the role. Bill Clinton had mm-hmm. his people in place, and their job was to do what they're doing for Hillary now. I mean, Hillary was in the Mecca, the political Mecca, if you will, Harlem at the – and it really was Showtime at the Apollo on Wednesday – and it happens to be the seat of black political power historically in the United States. But mm-hmm. look at the difference and the distance between the quality of representation now mm-hmm. with Charlie Rangel as the senior most representative in Congress mm-hmm. and the days of Adam Clayton Powell. There is no way Hillary Clinton, had there been a Powell type leader, there's no mm-hmm. way she's going to be coming in Harlem and feeling comfortable about it. But you have all these people. I saw today Sharpton's organization has sent out a news release saying that she is going to be speaking at the national plenary, whatever the heck that is. The point is that this is the role. And Carter G. Woodson said, if you are conditioned to come through a back door, and there is no back door, you will create one.
Yes.
So that is the power of conditioning, and that's where they have voluntarily placed themselves and the people they allegedly represent. And that is the answer to why there's no demand. There are no answers because there's no demand. I'm sorry.
Yes. Well, thank you.
But is that not the truth? There is no demand, so there is no answer.
Yes.
And we have to learn to demand.
We have
to learn to do it.
This system can't be reformed. Can't be reformed.
All right. Well, thank you so much.
And I thank you, my professor.
Well, actually, the roles are reversed. I take instruction. Thank you so much. And that brings us to the end of our program today. Very insightful comments. And it's the point of this program. It's your space, and you share with us your innermost thoughts. I thank you for being so brave to do that. And it is a learning session every time we gather here on Free Your Mind Friday. It's a session in which we teach each other things and bring new information for others to examine. And you never know. In this process, you might have started a revolution in someone's mind because they would have had to say to themselves, hey, you know, I didn't think about that. Let me pursue that a little more, and before you know it, new dimensions to a subject are opened up, and the person comes to entirely different conclusions about things because the information has been provided or the impetus has been provided to seek out new information. So thank you so much for constantly operating and participating at a very high level on this program. It does us all a great deal of good. Coming up next, Alternative Visions with Dr. Jack Rasmus. You want to stay tuned for that. You know, no shortage of revelations on that program. You can reach me at Lead Stories. That's LEID Stories, like my name, leadstories@gmail.com. Just yesterday, I want to thank a person who wrote me yesterday saying I should spell lead out so that people don't say LEAD. It's a play on my last name, Lead. Lead Stories, LEID, stories@gmail.com. This is the weekend. This is a time for you to relax, take it easy, get yourselves all reorganized for the battle next week. Surround yourselves with people who bring positive dimension to your life. Absolutely avoid people who don't or anything else that doesn't. Just don't even get it close to you on this weekend. Stay safe, and we'll see each other Monday. As always, a pleasure and a great privilege to be in your company. Bye-bye.